Welcome to Sessionable. We've got a very special guest on the podcast today. We're recording live from the back room at Frankie's, and we've got a friend of the show, I'd say, friend of all of ours.
I hope.
Definitely.
So we've got Doc here from Doctor's Orders Brewing. So welcome to Sessionable.
Cheers, guys. Great to be here, especially in the back room as well.
Yeah. You know, I've never been in this room before.
I have, but not when it's been a bar. It used to be keg storage and a junk room.
So we're here for the launch of your new beer, which is a collab with Frankie's, yeah?
Yeah. Jordan, the beer monster from the Swolfest group, pinged me early in the year saying, what do you think about doing a collaboration beer? And I said, yeah, lovely idea. I think something we should do. And so we spent the better part of a few months tossing around ideas about what it should be and when it should be released and what it should taste like and what the major ingredients were. And Jordan being Jordan, a lot of the ideas were pretty out there. The highest carb beer in the world. We use potatoes. We'll use everything. not into that. And then he wanted something that was pretty much a wheat-based beer and everything else. So... the long and the short of it, a few months went by, every couple of weeks, touch and base, you know, what are you thinking? And then I finally said, look, brew day's next Thursday. It's 100% wheat beer. I'm going to put wasabi in it. Are you in or yeah? And so the collab was going to be, the majority of the kegs coming to Frankie's. When I told him what the minimum keg run was for a Doctor's Orders beer these days, it became pretty apparent that Frankie's and the Swolfest group didn't have the capacity to move that amount of beer. So we dropped the real official collab part of it, other than Jordan did come along and spend the latter part of the brew day and stuff with us. And we're just doing a launch party here for it. And the ginger that you have in front of you, which we haven't talked about yet, is a bit of a twist for the beer, sort of for Frankie's. If other venues pick up on it, it's fine too, but it's the launch, the exclusive launch tonight to Frankie's, as part of the idea that spawned from Jordan.
Yeah, sweet, great. So we've got that in front of us now, so maybe we'll have a bit of a taste and
it's 100% wheat beer. Wheat beers typically you don't normally use any more than about 50% wheat. You can go higher, but typically in brewing beer in a traditional lauter based brew house, the more wheat you use, the harder the beer gets to make because there's no husks on the malt. And when you go to sparge it, typically it likes to stick and you get a stuck sparge when you're trying to rinse the sugars out. Everything sticks together. You can use things like rice hulls and stuff like that to help with it, but it becomes a pain. So typically you don't do it. But Rocks have this fantastic new brew house. They're using a mash filter-based system from IDD in California, which basically means you're not doing a traditional lauter. You're not rinsing out the grains. You're basically putting them in a big press and then using pressure to squeeze the wort out, which means you can use whatever you want. You can do 100% rye beer. You can do 100% wheat beer. They hadn't got to that point. I was like, well, if I'm going to use this brewery, I'm going to find out what it can do. Do a doc on it. And I said to Scotty, okay, here's my brew schedule for the beers that I want to brew in your fantastic new brew house. The first one's 100% wheat beer. And he didn't flinch. He thought the system was up to it. And it was. We
excellent.
Punched out a double brew day. So it's two... 2,400 litre batches in 8 hours with a hangover. So
that's mandatory there, right?
It didn't. I've been to the Camaray Craft official launch the night before.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So,
I think we all had.
So it was a little bit dicey getting there in the morning, but made it. Mm. So the only thing that went wrong is we froze the heat exchanger after the first run because it's a glycol chilled. Heat exchanger rather than just a cold liquor tank one. So just took a little bit of defrosting and a bit of coaxing, so it probably took about an hour longer than it should have, but the fact that we were able to punch out 4,400 odd litres of 100% wheat beer without skipping a beat was pretty awesome.
There was a bit of fanfare with Rocks when they put that system in. How do you find using it?
I've only used it once. I've been there for a few brew days, but for my beers only once so far. Yeah, I loved it. A little bit weird pressing buttons to brew beer because everything's designed so you can... it's basically a four-vessel brew house. As soon as the first one's on the boil, you can be mashing in the second one and everything else, so you can chase the second beer right in behind it. Mm-hmm. We had a little bit of a gap between these because what we haven't explained is it's actually a wheat porter. So it's got wheat, dark wheat, crystal wheat, chocolate wheat, roast wheat, and torrefied wheat in it.
Wow.
So I wasn't too sure what the extraction was going to be in terms of the colour and the astringency from the roast and the chocolate wheats. So I waited till it got into the kettle to have a taste to see what I was going to do with the second one. And on the second one, I didn't add any more roast. I just left it as it was. And the key thing, yeah, I didn't want too much of that astringency or anything else to take away from the wasabi that is also in there. Mm-hmm. And also didn't want it, on the other hand, didn't want it to be too light in colour either. A porter should be the colour you've got in your mm-hmm. in your yeah. cups.
And good colour for a porter.
So pretty much nailed that one as well. So, yeah, very happy. 100% wheat beer. I've done it as a home brewer,
it's a lot easier to do.
A stuck sparge, you can get a big spoon and just... Yeah. It takes you a bit longer. You just give it a stir and recirculate and do it again. But doing it on a commercial level. Yeah, you wouldn't do this in a traditional brew house. Mm.
And where did the wasabi element come from as an idea?
So the wasabi bit was sort of an Alestars thing, really. Alestars, for the local tap house, were going to be doing their annual brew. And one of the ideas that I came up with was 100% wheat beer, a wheat porter, which Chris from Four Pines turned into the idea of a wheat stout. And then the idea of wasabi, I think I came up with as well, wasabi peas or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Someone did.
And so when that didn't get chosen for the Alestars, they went with the Szechuan pepper coffee brown ale. Mm-hmm. So bugger it, I'll take the 100% wheat porter idea back and I'll do it myself and I'll do the wasabi thing. Yeah. And so then when I was... Then I had to do some research on wasabi. You know, where the hell I was going to get wasabi from? What does wasabi look like in its raw form? Can I get it in Australia and everything else? So,
yeah.
So that became the research process, and I learned a lot about wasabi. There is an Australian grower in Tasmania.
Oh, cool.
There's also a New Zealand grower as well of it. So it comes as like a root. You've got to then usually grate it to use it, and it loses some of its potency pretty quick. The green stuff you get in a tube at a sushi place or something like that has got, you know, corn starch and colouring and a bunch of other crap in it, which isn't, you know, really reminiscent of the real thing. So what you're actually getting in the beer is not some of that flavour, it's more of a mustardy type flavour to it. I think it's relatively mild, but anyone I've given it to that doesn't like wasabi says it's got wasabi.
Yeah.
So I think it's a tolerance thing, like salt.
Yeah.
Some people don't like salt, and they find, you know, even mildly salty things way too salty. I think this beer is going to be a little bit like that. But,
did you think that getting the wasabi balance was one of the more challenging aspects of
that this was beer? Chris Paul from Beards Brewing in Japan is a guy I used to converse a lot with in our home brewing days. Mm-hmm. He's obviously head brewer for Beards now.
Yeah.
I pinged him and said, you've got a wasabi green tea pale ale, I think they do. Mm-hmm. You know, tell me about wasabi and how you use it.
Yep.
And they happen to be in a wasabi growing area, so they use the raw product. When I talked to the growers down here and talked about working out how much I'd need, getting it up here, getting it fresh, using it was going to be a bit of a nightmare. But both the Kiwi and the Tasmanian places do a 100% powder version of wasabi, so it comes in a small packet. It's quite intense. On the side of it says "Do not inhale." And the first thing I did when I bought it is I want to sniff it to see what it is. So
like
I had to resist on that.
The sushi version of alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah. Ended up using twice as much as what I expected.
Oh wow!
But again, it's for 4,300 liters or whatever it is. It's minute compared to using other ingredients that I use in other beers. In the palm of my hand sort of stuff. It's definitely double than what I was expecting to use.
Cool.
Half of it went in the boil, the other half went into the bright tank at the end when we were tasting it, when the yeast had dropped out and we could actually taste the beer without having it muddied and just where it was at.
Yeah.
I would have liked to add some more, but I think if I added more, it was going to become more dirty and earthy and dusty, and it was going to take away from some of the beer. So it was trying to find enough of a nuance to be there, but not a dominating flavour and everything else. So mm-hmm. I'm very happy with it.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm actually not getting a lot of it, and I hate wasabi usually. So I think it's a good thing that you didn't use anymore.
As it warms up, you get more on the back of your tongue, right at the end. And when it gets to about 10 degrees, it becomes, it's almost like a hot bitterness at the end, but it's not hops.
It's that numbing effect.
It's that wasabi paste.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But it doesn't give you that horseradish up the nose type thing. Yeah. It's part of the flavour of it.
Yeah.
I'm loving having the pink ginger with it as well.
Yeah, so the ginger was, here was the twist. You know, what do you have when you go to a Japanese sushi restaurant or whatever, you might have a bit of wasabi and then maybe some pickled ginger on your sushi.
Mm. Yeah.
So I got some pickled ginger and tried it with the beer when it was in Bright Tank. Put some in a cup and tasted it. Put some in my mouth and drank over it and did it in a few different ways like that. And I thought it added to the beer and that made it something awesome. A little bit different.
Yeah.
The pickled ginger does tend to numb your tongue a little bit and everything else, mm-hmm. but it gives it another dimension. It's something just a not, I wouldn't say a gimmick, another,
no,
just another,
another element,
another element of flavour, another point of differentiation for a doctor's orders beer, and hopefully the bar tomorrow won't be littered with empty ginger, pickled ginger, pickets everywhere. Hopefully people take lots of photos and Instagram it and tweet it and everything else.
It also adds a bit of that in your nose sort of heat as well.
Yeah. So
I like it.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. So maybe we'll talk a bit about your kind of history and doctor's orders as the progression that's come. I think the first one I tried was the Zephyr a few years ago. I had a growler of it.
So Zephyr's been around for four summers.
Yeah.
It's our summer beer. It comes out.
The second one I had.
Yeah, so that would have been the. So the first year we did it was for the very first Gabs. It was the Great Australian Beer Spectacular that the local tap house did.
That was the one in the tap house?
That was actually in the tap house in Sydney and in Melbourne. I was running the Ale Stars for them in Sydney. I was doing collaborations with commercial breweries like the Macquarie Hotel and Potter's in the Hunter Valley. And they said, we're going to do this great Australasian Beer Spectacular. We're going to get 20 of the Australians' best craft brewers and get them to brew a beer they haven't made before, and we'll put them on the tap all in one day and make a festival of it. And I said, that sounds awesome, Steve and Guy. But even more so awesome if you invite me to be one of those. And they said, oh, of course. Yeah, I'm just running the idea past you. But yeah, absolutely, that's awesome. I said, well, I've got the company. I've got the idea. I just haven't got a liquor license yet, but that gives me the...
impetus, sort of.
Yeah, the what do you call it? The motivation to finalise that horrible paperwork, because I hate filling in forms, that sort of stuff. My wife does all the forms and everything else, but when it comes to things like for beer, like a liquor license, something else, that's your domain. You look after it. So I procrastinated on it for about 3 months. Then it was a case of crap. By the time I go through all the steps, I need get it submitted, get it approved. Yeah, I've got to do it tomorrow so I can be there. So I did it, submitted it, and it got rejected by the council. The council recommended to the liquor board that they do not approve my liquor license because they thought I was going to be running a brewery out of my house. They hadn't read the cover letter. They'd only seen about four sheets of the application and just said no.
Yeah.
I tried to ring the guy. He had already gone on Christmas leave. This is like the 23rd of December. And they weren't coming back until... early January, so I sort of booked in a brew day anyway, had the recipe sort of sorted, and then brewed the beer, and then 2 days after I'd actually brewed the beer, so I was just starting fermentation, after I'd spoken personally with the licensing guy from the council and everything else, they resubmitted back to council and it got approved, so thank Christ for that.
Obviously you were an avid home brewer before you started brewing commercially. What were the kind of the steps from becoming a home brewer to?
Well, it was more just relationships with mates who were working commercial breweries more than anything else. Mm-hmm. It wasn't always a thing of going commercial. I mean, that's every home brewer's dream, but I thought I'd never do it. I was just having fun, just doing bigger beers on a commercial scale and seeing it on tap somewhere and having a bit of fun. After I'd done like four or five of those, it also got to the point though, hey, hang on, it's my idea, my recipe. These guys have got the risk, obviously, but they're taking that risk, but they're also, you know,
financially,
they're getting benefiting from it as well. And take nothing away from them, I wouldn't change it. I mean, that's how I got started, and I've still got awesome relationships with those guys. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have it anyway, but yeah, when the Scabs thing came along and everything else, then I'd like do it myself, and I've just built it from there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And you're obviously kind of infamous for doing some pretty crazy stuff. I mean, just you know, you did. I mean, Cephalopod, I think, is one that's pretty.
The beer,
infamous.
Everyone. It always comes back to Cephalopod somewhere in every conversation about doctor's orders. Squid ink always comes up.
But I mean, I've got a list here of your beers, and it's a pretty crazy list. You know, just, I mean, yeah. So you've got the your regular ones like Iron Lung, Black Imperial Pilsner.
Yep.
You know, that's pretty out there. That's not something you see.
It was when I first did it. Not so much these days. Craft beer's moved on.
Yeah, but it's still.
When I first did it, you know, black IPAs were sort of the rage, and I obviously did one of those as well in the early days of black IPAs called Mind Warp.
Mm-hmm. Great beer.
In order to stay ahead of the curve, Black Imperial Pilsner was my next thing. Neil Cameron from the Australian Brew was like, what the fuck do you want to do one of those for? Yeah, and he tried it and goes, that's just wrong. No. I said, this is the next beer we're brewing in your brew house. And he goes, you're stupid. It's gone on to, I've entered in the International Beer Awards the last 2 years, the Australian International Beer Awards, and it's got silver medal at both, so yeah, in your face. the name, I was in a historical town called Shantytown in New Zealand, which is like a historical village from the sort of 1800s, 1900s, that sort of stuff. They've got this old hospital set up in this old town, and they had these iron lung machines there, and I was there with my dad and stuff like that, and I was like, Iron Lung, that's a name for a beer. I did originally want Black Lung, but Moondog beat me to that, and subsequently I'm pretty happy that I didn't go with a disease, Iron Lung is a much better name.
Yeah.
So on that, like, where do you get your kind of your inspiration? Not just for the beers that you do, the styles, but the names as well, and
The names. I've got a list on my phone of just when I've read things or seen something or whatever. That's just a nice name that fits with the brand and everything else, and I just put it in the list. When I've got a beer that I'm making, usually it's the beer first, the name second, and then it's trying to fit a name to it. Sometimes it's really easy. Sometimes it's really, really hard. Electrolyte was the one that was really, really hard. That was going to...
But it's perfect, though.
It had so many working names, and I was just about to go with one of them, and then I was reading something, helping my son with his homework or something like that, and something, electrolyte or something, I was just like, yes, that works. A bit of salt, a bit of whatever, that works.
I can't imagine a better name for that beer.
Things like defibrillator, the name came first, so then it had to be a Weizen Doppelbock. Enzinator has to be a Weizen Doppelbock. So I designed a beer around a name. It doesn't happen too often, but yeah, that was one like that.
I didn't pick up on that until now.
As for styles, it's more about blending two things together and making it, rather than blending it at a bar, actually, black in the colour, so colours feature quite heavily in some of my stuff, but that's also part of the emerging styles, is sometimes it's more about colour and strength and everything else than it is about inventing a new style.
Yeah.
It's, you know, adding a different colour to an existing style. So black IPAs, black Imperial Pilsners, white IPAs,
white
sort
stouts,
of stuff.
The nightmares.
Black Saisons, black Berlinerweisses, red Berlinerweisses.
Green Berlinerweisses.
Radioactive
every shade
green
of green
beer.
Available. Berlinerweisses, yeah.
Well, the first one I had was purple. I had it at Young Henry's, like, I think before you released it fully. And it was purple. I was like, that's weird, a purple beer. And then every time I had it, it was a different colour.
Yeah.
So I guess Cephalopod's kind of a bit infamous for being sent, like, being a non-vegetarian beer sent to a vegetarian restaurant.
Yes.
Is putting food items in beer kind of a conscious decision, or just is like incidental to the type of beer that you think of?
It's got to be something that works that I think is, you know, adds to the beer. The Squid Ink was sort of a Berliner Weiss is its own flavor and everything else,
yep.
But I figured that if I just did a normal Berliner Weiss and people didn't know what a Berliner Weiss was, they'll be having this sort of lowly carbonated, low alcohol, tartly sour beer and thinking it was infected and everything else, and they wouldn't be thinking about what they were drinking. They'll just be thinking about what it should be and what it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So by putting a color in there, it was to make people have a conscious decision about what they were putting in their mouth and thinking about what it was, and then it is deciding whether they liked it or not.
Mm-hmm.
The visual on it was a lot more than I anticipated, with the Squid Ink not wanting to stay in solution and the color varying from like a dirty paint water gray through to a radioactive green. The dark gray was what I was going for. By the end of it, though, the Instagrams and tweets of it, you know, this is I'm having a cephalopod today at this venue and today's color is...
Yeah.
it got a life of its own and I loved it by the end of it. If it wasn't radioactive green, I wasn't happy. At the start, if it wasn't, you know, dirty gray, then I wasn't happy.
Yeah,
because I had black Berliner Weiss on the label. So, yeah, but at the same time, yeah, that Squid Ink is a not
would you
a fun stuff to mess around with. No, I probably wouldn't. never say never, but at this stage, no.
Okay.
So this year's version of the Berliner Weiss, I tend to do it every midsummer. It's my midsummer season now, Berliner Weiss, and this year I put rhubarb in there.
Nice.
Which I had done before in another beer at Potter's a few years ago, which was a Belgian breakfast rhubarb beer.
Mm-hmm.
But this year in a Berliner Weiss, and I think that worked well. It added a bit more tartness to it, a little bit of that earthy complexity to it. The aftertaste was definitely sort of rhubarb. I would have liked to add more, but the thing with rhubarb is it is also a laxative. So there's a certain point at which you add it that, and depending on how much you have, it can get, you can start dicing with,
that
with bodily functions.
Things.
So you can piss and shit yourself at the same time.
both ends.
Yeah.
So I had these drums of rhubarb juice, and I took the last bits of the drums home, and I said to my wife, oh, smell this. This is awesome. Just the rhubarb, the intensity and the tartness of it was just amazing. And then I started spiking all the beers that I had on tap at home, like Zephyr and Electrolyte and all this rhubarb, and just like, I overdid it.
Shit got real, yeah. I wanted to ask, because in order for you to do what you do, you have to have a lot of relationships with different breweries and different brewers. How has that been? And because you've moved to quite a few different breweries along the way.
Predominantly I've used three, and predominantly I've used two since it's been under my brand or my own thing. The primary one's been the Australian Brewery, and the secondary one's been Young Henry's. That's still ongoing. I'm still using the Australian for my primaries, so that's the Zephyr,
the big ones.
Iron Lung, Plasma, and Prescription 12. Young Henry's I do definitely for my sour beers. Like the cephalopod and transfusion we've done there. Also the defibrillator, night nurse, and there's a couple of others I've done there as well. It's really about what style of beer suits what brewery, but also where I can get capacity.
Mm-hmm.
With the Australian, I would know that I need Zephyr for summer, I need Iron Lung for autumn, Plasma for winter, and Prescription 12 for spring. So that's always in the schedule. There's plenty of time to time it, and it works. Then the mid-seasonals and everything else I've done wherever I can. With Rocks Online now as well, they're not at full capacity yet. There's more tanks on the way. I've slotted in so that I'm the only other person to use it at this point. They do have plans of letting a few other people use it, but at the same time, demand for their beers has increased as well. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually have the capacity for others to use it.
Yeah.
I'm locked in there for another couple in the immediate future. So hopefully that'll continue and I can keep punching out some really crazy stuff on a mash filter system that I can't do on the others.
Just another bow to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually. It's like, when you're coming up with a beer, do you have an idea where it's going to be brewed?
Typically, yes.
Yeah.
Because the main seasonal is always no. And then when I need to do a mid-seasonal, I see where I got capacity. And that's like usually about the same time I'm thinking about what I'm doing. Because the second question from them is always, okay, yeah, we can slot you in and whatever. And what's the beer?
Yeah.
And well, for someone like Young Henry's with Richard and Oscar, if it's not an interesting, crazy, out there beer, it's not something that's intriguing to them, then they'll probably say, "Yeah, no." But if it's something different, a bit crazy, whatever, say, "Yeah, I like the idea of that. I wouldn't mind seeing that happen in front of me, and we can. And if it's brewed there, then they can put it on their tasting bar and stuff like that." Yeah. So
I can't see you ever having a problem with that.
Has anyone just said, "Why don't you just make a double IPA or like?"
Yeah, why don't you make a pale ale? Why don't you make a pilsner? Why don't you? It's like, no. There's plenty of other breweries doing that.
Yeah,
that's not my that's not my gig.
So the first beer I had of yours was the Mind Warp, and that was brewed at the Hunter.
Yeah, that was brewed at Potter's. Yep.
Do you still brew anything over there?
No. Volume.
Yeah. Okay. They are pretty small.
So Hunter Valley, hour and a half from home. Mm. Full brew day, 8 to 10 kegs.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's not worth it.
Not worth it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Is your volume, I would assume, would have increased quite a fair bit over the last couple of years?
I'm doing the biggest amount of volume I can do in a double brew day at either venue. So it's basically just over 4,000 litres at Rocks and about 4,000 litres at the Australian. So that's a double brew day.
Yeah.
So a double brew day at the Australian usually starts 7 in the morning. I'm usually out of there 9 to midnight at night after a double. And Rocks, like I said before, 8 hours because it's a mash filter for the vessel. You can chase the first one in after the other one.
Still a big day.
It's got to be done.
Yeah. Would you ever look at moving from being just a seasonal release to doing brewing kind of more full time, or
in your own bricks and mortar brewery, or,
Or are you pretty my brewery at this stage? I don't need one because the breweries I'm using are putting in more capacity and everything else. For the most part, they love having me around because it's interesting and different and whatever. So I can still get brew spots when I stop when I don't have the capacity and everything else. Then I'll either have to look for yet another brew house to spread myself across, or maybe doing something for myself. But the capital expenditure to start your own brewery, it becomes a full-time gig. At the moment, it's a part-time gig for me. I don't have to worry about maintaining a brew house and running it and keeping it capacity to pay for itself. All three that I'm using, the head brewers at each of them are really good mates of mine. I've known them before they were in those positions in those breweries, so it's not a case of, you know, you've got a brewery come along and I'm asking you to use it and I've never really known you before. It's existing relationships. It makes it a lot easier, especially when I see other people trying to do similar things now and they're sort of struggling to get capacity, but also they don't have necessarily that personal relationship. It's more of a business agreement in terms of getting some brew time on someone else's brewery. And you've got to do what you've got to do, but it's a bit of a unique situation.
So do you call yourself a contract brewer, a gypsy brewer?
Cuckoo brewer.
Cuckoo brewer,
So a cuckoo brewer, the analogy, it's come from New Zealand. I think Dave Cryer called me a cuckoo brewer at Gabs a few years ago. And I didn't quite get it. And then he goes, like cuckoos, they take over other birds' nests to lay their eggs. And I physically go and brew all my beers at these venues. So I thought, I like that, cuckoo brewer. It's sort of like contract, but it's a little bit more descriptive of how I do it versus how other contract brewers do it. Contract brewing is probably still a little bit of a bad term.
In
Australia, not so much New Zealand.
Well, I'm up front. It implies that you're not actually doing the brewing.
I'm up front. It is what it is. It's on my website where I currently brew. So
I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of.
I think if anything, if you're going to do it, you've got to be open about it. Right?
Yeah.
That's the I think most people don't have a problem with contract brewers and brewers who don't have their own brewery. As long as you're up front about it.
Yeah. Mm. And you're not sort of saying to someone, "I want you to brew me a beer that's this color, has this sort of bitterness, and goes well with fish." Go and design me a recipe and make it happen. That's not my idea of having a brewing company and making beer.
That's not really. Yeah. No.
Speaking of which, shall we move to the next one?
I think we shall. Yeah. Yeah. I already have.
I've been patient trying to wait.
So this is the This is the 6 Point Righteous.
Mm-hmm. 6 Point. Yeah. So they're a relatively new.
Yeah.
Comer to Australia.
I think this might have been like the third 6 Point we've had on the show so far. So we're big fans.
We do like our 6 Point.
Yeah.
And it looks like an amber. Is it an amber ale?
It's a rye.
Rye. Amber
Rye, Hoppy Rye, I think, is it? Let's have a look at the can.
I don't think they actually put descriptions or styles on there.
No, it doesn't
cans.
Really say, does it?
Yeah. I don't think... It's something that I don't do, I've noticed.
Which is pretty cool.
So... I know it's got rye in it.
How cool is that? The barcode.
The barcode. Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it actually works as a barcode, which is amazing.
Yeah, so there's a standard for that. So actually putting graphics and barcodes and everything else.
As long as it's got a certain width. And
part of the GS1 standard and stuff like that, I've been reading about barcodes recently.
Yeah, ever since working in a bottle shop, I've never noticed the fact that beers had barcodes before. It's such a massive pain in the ass when a beer doesn't have a barcode. It really is. Mm. On that note, I heard... Actually, when I was at work yesterday and I had a customer out ringing and said, oh, can you get some Doctor's Orders beers in? And I was like, well, Doc doesn't bottle any of his beers. And they said that you had just bottled some beers. Is that true or false?
It's false. I had a guy ping me the other day saying, where can I get the bottle of bottles of Doctor's Orders like I see on your Twitter page?
Oh.
And I'm like, let me go and look at my Twitter page.
Was I really drunk one night?
And sure enough, there was a picture of a bottle on my Twitter feed that said Doctor's Orders. But what it is a mate of mine lives in the UK. He used to live end of the block. He found a bottle of Hospital Records, their signature series. They did a thing for Doctor's Orders.
Right.
It's a beer called Doctor's Orders under the Hospital Records brand. And he works for Thomson Reuters, so he mulled it back through one of the other guys that was in the London office that was coming back to the Sydney office, and I picked it up around the corner the other day. So that's where that came from. But it is coming. Bottling is on the horizon.
Oh, wow.
The labels are done. The caps are sorted. The bottles have chosen.
What size bottles are you looking to get?
500ml bottles.
Yeah.
Not cans.
Not cans. we'll be showcasing what it's going to look like, engaging interest at the Gabs stand at the in Melbourne next month. So I'm having mock-ups basically done.
Yeah, cool.
So they're in process at the moment. The plan initially is just to do the whatever seasonal is. So there'll be a draft release and a seasonal release and take it from there. But that's all relying on a venue or a brewery to put in a bottling line. Rocks are talking about it. They've been talking about it for a while.
Yeah.
I think they're getting closer to actually ordering it. So it's just waiting on that. When it goes in, make sure it all works, make sure the quality control's there, make sure everything does what it's supposed to before I go and commit. I can't put something in a bottle that's not going to work or have stability or anything else. So that's the plan for that. The scary bit is, one, putting it in bottles and then having them go out and not have that level of control that you have over kegs. Also having to deal with bottle shops and restaurants and cafes and stuff like that. That's pretty intimidating. But news that will be announced by the time this goes to air, just signed with Experience It for my distributor. So they'll be doing draft product first, and when bottles come along, they'll be doing that as well.
That's great.
So that's going to be Australia-wide?
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
So vaccine won't be quite Australia-wide. That's the first beer they're handling. It won't go past South Australia or Queensland. The next beer will be the Electrolyte Fort. That probably won't go too far either because it's a smaller volume out of Young Henry's.
Yeah.
Plasma will be the big one that will go nationwide. That will go to Tasmania and WA as well.
Is that going to be so you're doing a bit of travelling in the state?
So I was in Tasmania recently,
Did
an event down there. I've sent beer down there a couple of times a year for the last few years. I've sent a little bit to Perth before, but not much, mainly because just getting your kegs back takes too long.
Yeah.
But with the changes, the things like Kegstar and the one-way kegs getting better and everything else, we're going to jump on that bandwagon as well and make it more... Awesome. Economically viable to get it across, and also with a distributor having other great beers like Six Point in their portfolio, customers can order a mixed palette of multiple lines from multiple brewers,
and
get one invoice, and it will go refrigerated, and I'll be on that list.
Yeah.
It also gets me into venues that some of the bigger venues that you need to be on their authorized. Supplier list. So there's a few venues around Sydney that are in that situation. It'll get me into those venues as well, which is exciting.
Awesome. That's really good news, man.
Yeah. And I think coming from the other side of the chain, they're really good people to work for. And
yeah, I don't think there are, there's a better distributor at the moment.
They're up there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it was a tough decision to make. I mean, I've been doing everything myself. Mm. The making the beer, delivering the beer, organising freight for interstate, doing the invoicing, chasing accounts, organising the branding, doing the events, everything else.
Yeah.
We've got a day job, got a couple of kids.
That was our time.
It was getting to the point where with the increased volume and the number of beers I'm doing, it's just too many balls in the air.
Yeah.
And whilst, you know, if a keg's a day late or something like that, it's not too bad. But, you know, when everything else is compounding on top of that, if I, you know, drop a couple of the other balls, then life's going to get pretty shitty. So So it was a decision that had to be made. And then it was a relatively easy one in the end, having known Johnny and Kerry for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And they were just happening to getting into the Australian craft for distributing other than the Italian, UK and US stuff that they were doing. So it was a good time. Obviously, Hendo with Brewcot was their first. I had a lot of discussions with Hendo about, you know, how it was working for him. Boat Rocker were their second. I'm their third. So
they haven't actually done anything with Boat Rocker yet.
It's coming.
Yeah,
but they've signed.
Yeah. Cool.
That's sweet.
That's really exciting news.
So on that, you get to do exciting things with distributors with their other brands as well, especially when they come into the country for international beer awards and stuff like that. Cool. So we're drinking a 6-point.
Yeah.
You can expect a 6-point collaboration beer that will be available, or that'll be out...
in cans? Or
no. No, it won't be in cans.
Everyone's got the hard on for the cans.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah. I was talking earlier about setting up, I think it's a business model they got in the States, a mobile canning unit. You go around to other people's breweries.
And, yeah. It's pretty popular in the US.
Yeah.
If I was to do cans, it'd have to be 500ml ones, like the old Foster's Oil cans or something like that, 1 liter, whatever. That would be the doctor's order style. None of this 375 stuff.
Puny little Red Bull cans.
These are what, 470, I think, the 6-point ones.
Yeah.
Other than the 473. The high res and stuff is smaller, I think.
They're little. The nano kegs, they call them.
Yeah. So that will be out. So we're brewing that before they go to Melbourne in a couple of weeks. It's about the 13th of May, I think, we're brewing that. So that'll be...
Good beer, weedy.
That beer will be out mid-June. Yes, and then I'm heading to Good Beer, Weedy. I'm doing Yeasty Boys and myself are the two brewers that have been part of every Good Beer, Weedy. Mm-hmm. And they've invited me back again this year. They will be commissioning their brew house a week or so before Good Beer Weedy.
Oh,
and they've scheduled a bunch of collaboration brews with Yeasty Boys on their new brew house. So Yeasty Boys will be doing one, I think, with Magic Rock, I think, Magic Rock, and also doing one with me on the Monday down there. So that'll be fun.
And so Yeasty Boys, they're curating Good Beer Weedy this year, is that right?
Well, it's called Good
Beer Weedy Yeasty?
Good Beer, good beer Yeasty
Weedy
or something like that. Yeah, something like that. That's probably what you said. because the idea to have Good Beer Weedy spawned from a conversation between Jade and Stu. So it's just keeping them involved. So I've known Stu for a number of years, obviously being fellow Kiwis. We originally tried to do a collaboration in 2011, Yeasty Boys Doctor's Orders. Because I was over there for the World Cup for a couple of months and everything else. I was like, oh, it'd be easy, you know. We just schedule one in, find a nice brew house, whatever. but it didn't work out. The timing, the number of beers others they had going on at that time, New Zealand was going crazy for football, everything else, for rugby. It didn't come off. So it's nice to finally do a collaboration with them. It's going to be interesting.
Cool. I think we've got about 10 minutes before we're going to get inundated with people.
Yeah.
5 minutes, so we might have to smash out another beer quickly.
All right, well, we'll have the next beer now if we all...
While that's being poured, just quickly, with Gabs coming up very soon, can you talk us through what you're doing for Gabs?
Yeah, so my Gabs beer this year is an Imperial version of my Gosa. So so last year, my mid-spring seasonal was a beer called Electrolyte, which is a Gosa. Gosa is a historical beer from eastern Germany, from around the Leipzig area. It's sort of a slightly salty, tart German wheat beer. What happened is I had a keg of it at home. The fridge went on the fritz. It partially froze the keg. I drank it. I drank and think, oh, that flavour seems to be a lot more bold than I remember. And then when I picked up the keg and heard that there was ice in it and everything else, I thought, ah, it's an imperial version because it's, you know, yeah, it's fractionally ice.
It's
ice,
ice, ice. So, not your first accidental ice bock, is it?
So then the idea was to do that as a commercial thing.
Yep.
So, you know, freeze a tank and everything else. So I was scheduled in to do that at Rocks Brewing, and then the more Scotty thought about it, the more he got nervous about freezing a tank because they'd inadvertently done it a little bit a few weeks earlier. And when the ice fell off the side of the tank, the whole tank shook a bit, and he was a bit nervous. So we'll do my gas, yeah, we'll freeze it, yeah, it'll be fine, you know, we'll just do it gently, we'll take gravity readings, we can do it, you know, yeah. He's like, no. Well, no, it wasn't no, he was like, oh. And then finally, he got up enough courage to say, no, you will not be freezing a tank, I'm never going to freeze a tank, it's not safe, it's dangerous, it's whatever else, no, you can't do it. So, and then at the same time as, you know, the beer I'm doing was 6 Point, I'm going to do at Rocks as well. They were having some issues getting a few beers out, just getting up to capacity. So I bumped that beer to Young Henry's, and they don't have the capacity to freeze a tank anymore because of their increased tank size and everything else. The glycol just manages to do enough of a job to carbonate a beer, let alone freeze a tank. So so the compromise was just to do an imperial version, just amplify the alcohol, the amount of coriander, the amount of salt, and do it that way. So that's what I've gone for.
Cool.
Well, we've got a pretty apt beer to finish on.
Yeah.
One, because it is a Yeasty Boys beer, and two, because it's Frankie's, and I can't leave Frankie's without having a whiskey. So this is a pretty good middle point, I reckon.
Yeah.
So if you can't pick it, it's the Yeasty Boys. It's the Rex, isn't it?
Yeah, just the Rex attitude.
OG Rex. Yeah.
I love the comments that this beer gets.
Did you see the ones on Untappd the other day for X-Rex?
Yeah.
What was that?
I got a photo of it. I took a screenshot of it. It's
fantastic.
It's a classic. It's a classic Yeasty Boys type review.
Yeah.
It's a polarizing beer. You either love it or you hate it, and I guess for a lot of people, it's more hate than love. Tastes like I walked around in dog shit all day, threw my shoes in a barrel of gasoline, set it alight, added the ashes to water, bottled it.
It's great.
But in a good way.
So Stu always gets hate mail about that beer because it's so polarizing. Talking to Ross at Bacchus the other day. And he recently received his first bunch of hate mail for an imperial mocha porter or Russian imperial stout or something like that.
Yeah.
He received smoked stout or something like that. Yeah. He got his first bit of hate mail. And he sort of wasn't sure how to take it. One, that someone had taken enough time to write an email to tell him how much I hated his beer and how they thought they'd waste their money on it. And
dear
and
consumer,
he'd hurriedly authored a reply or something, well, hopefully you'll find something else you like in our lineup. I think he was about to post it to Facebook or whatever and get some mileage from it. But
I think on that note, we kind of have to wrap it up here because we're, the back room we're recording in is about to open to the public. You can send your hate mail about Sessionable to at SessionableCast on Twitter. If it's good stuff, though, send it to at SessionablePod.
So you can actually read it.
So we can read it, yeah. but thanks for having us. What am I trying to say?
Thanks for coming around, though.
That's what I meant to say.
Pleasure. Good to see you guys. Drink beer. Talk beer.
Cheers, man.
As always, I'm at Studying Beer on Twitter.
I'm at The Beer Lebowski.
I'm at Adrian Poor.
And Doc?
At DRS Orders Bruin. No G on the end. There's a 14 character limit.
Excellent. All right. See you later.
Cheers.
Cheers.